Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to Kana Stories, a show by people of color, for people of color, and everyone else. I'm Halee Lee. I'm a media professional in Twin Cities.
Anthony Galloway, race equity advocate and owner of Umoja Consulting.
Brant Williams, I'm a correspondent here at Minnesota Public Radio News.
Don Eubanks, assistant professor and cultural consultant from Metropolitan State University.
And our usual panelist, Luz, is on vacation, a very well-deserved vacation. And so we have sitting in with us,
Marianne Quiroz, co-director of Indigenous Roots.
Welcome. So you guys, obviously there's a lot to talk about. And I think the thing that is probably most on people's mind is the Starbucks incident. Yet again, another incident of a commercial business discriminating against people of color. There's a lot of back and forth. There's a lot of different feeling about this. You know, one of the main things is people are saying, well, you shouldn't be in Starbucks if you're not going to be a customer. although they're waiting for somebody who they're going to have coffee with. I mean, when I first saw it, I just thought, I honestly was just like, ugh, not again. I didn't make a big deal out of it, you know, because I just thought, ugh, again, it happens. But now we have video of it, and that's what's sparking this huge conversation. But we're all kind of used to getting treated that way.
In I was like, places. Is it Tuesday? I mean, yeah. I mean, what stood out for me when it happened is just the extreme nature of it, you know, that pulls out the pattern of it. Just the fact that police are called and you got this video that goes viral. And so it becomes more kind of pressing and sentient just because of that. But being asked or being treated differently because you're sitting there, you know, I've gone into Starbucks just to type papers, and I've had the negative experience at Starbucks before, where you know, if you're not there to buy a coffee and you just want to post up and do some work, you're not kind of welcome here. I haven't gotten that same feeling in other places. So the pattern is new. Somebody interrupts you, or you're buying something, all of a sudden you become investigated for your presence in this space because you shouldn't be here otherwise, is not new.
Is that, you think that's a characteristic of the corporate culture of Starbucks, as where maybe you go to someplace else and you don't get that same feeling? Do you think there's something that they do that is...
Well, this is the problem, because when it came on my feed, it was my white friends who were incensed about it more so than folks in my community. The thing at work here for me, you shouldn't be here. There's something odd about your presence in this space. You are interrupting the natural flow of this particular space, is a pattern that I've experienced in many different places. Starbucks ain't special.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get at. Yeah. I'm playing my reporter part. Is like, I'm trying to get a sense of if anybody's seen that Starbucks has something in their training manuals where if you see someone who you feel is suspicious or not,
it's in purposely their not buying handbook,
exactly in their employee handbook, they're trained to actually feel free to call the police if you know. But as you just said, you can get that treatment in a lot of other places, not just Starbucks.
As an entrepreneur, I have a lot of coffee meetings. You know, I mean, I'll have like 4 or 5 coffee meetings in a day. I can't drink that much coffee. And so sometimes if I get there early, I'll wait for the person I'm meeting to come in with. Usually just out of courtesy, one of us will buy something. But no one's ever come up to me and been like, you know, you came in here and you sat down on your laptop and you're just working and now you're not talking to, like, you didn't buy anything. No one's ever approached me, even in super, super busy Starbucks. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's like, no, there's no table available because there's so many people there at that time. Still, I can go in there and I can work and not be bothered by the staff.
There's a problem here in that, you know, I don't, we'll get sucked into the policy of whether or not to interrupt somebody. And that's not the pattern that is at issue here. Uh-huh. What's at issue here is that these brothers did not look like they belonged there. Yeah. And they made somebody uncomfortable. And that person went and called the police because they
But they, Anthony, they so when you say they look like they didn't belong there, what do you mean by that?
Well, I wonder if they were wearing suits.
Well, no. They were just sitting there.
I'm wondering. And, I know, but if they came in,
no, they
black
were
guys
in suits.
No. They weren't. Well, but I'm saying if they were, I wonder if the cops would have been called.
Professor Nye, she's answering your question for me.
If two black guys came in with really nice suits on and just sat down at a table, the waitress said, or the person that worked there said, she approached them and asked them if they were going to buy something. I'm sure, I don't know if, I don't know for sure if the cops would have been called in that situation, but I think that's what we're
trying to get to. Cops would have arrested them.
Right.
Well, thanks for setting me up really nicely, because that's exactly my answer to your question, which is funny because when I have gone in and I've been in suit, or I've been in what I call my pastor uniform, where it's jeans, dress shoes, and a sport coat over a shirt, right? That's that youth pastor outfit, right? I make that conscious decision when I'm flying, when I'm going into spaces like this, depending on if I don't want to be bothered. When I'm wearing my superhero, my black superhero hoodie, and this, I got this really nice hoodie with the black, the black characters in Marvel, and like jeans and stuff like that, and a backpack, and I'm getting my headphones on because I'm about to crank out 15 pages of this paper. I get interrupted more often if I don't buy something right away. Or I might go in there and buy a little nasty Kind bar and just make sure I have that
break your teeth
out so
bar.
People can see that so and I don't
even,
get bothered.
So even if it is a policy, right, and with Starbucks, so it reminds me of every, you know, most corporations, most businesses have some form of policy. It's how those policies are followed through with that create these situations. Yes, so for me personally, it's like standing in line at a department store and white person after white person goes through and pulls out their credit card or pulls this out, writes a check or whatever. And then all of a sudden when I come up, when I pull mine out, I'm asked for an ID. And so when I ask then, because I always ask, why do I have to show my ID when the four people in front of me didn't have to show their ID? And then they tell me, well, it's policy. I said, oh, but it's selective how you decided to use it. So could I talk to your manager? Because and
those
so,
are good points. And what I'm interested too in the Starbucks story is because not only we're trying to find out if they're following a policy, but I'm interested in like the tick off of like of how things went from the interaction with the young men there, asking them first, were they buying anything? And the response, and what was the moment where that employee decided that they needed to call the police? What was the interaction like?
Is that your reporter mind asking that, or is that your kind of walking through the world as a black male? Like,
yeah, I mean,
thought
it's,
process
it's a little bit of both, and it comes from the Sandra Bland incident because we did a lot of one of my colleagues at National Public Radio did a really interesting tick off of the interaction between Sandra Bland and that trooper and that ranger of the. This was a moment where that officer could have backed off. This was a moment of one of the two people could have gone one way and it went this way. How is that officer trained to handle situations like that? How does his own personal background as a white law enforcement officer talking with a black woman who is not happy to be there? Police officers know that people are not happy to see them at any time. So why would that be a different situation for him? And so if you're a barista working at a Starbucks, I want to know, it's like, is anybody telling them, it's like, look, you know, if you're going to go up and talk to somebody and inform them of the policy that they have to buy something in order to use the bathroom, you should be prepared that perhaps they may not react nicely to that. And these gentlemen appeared to be pretty polite. These guys didn't seem like they reacted in any way that would have caused anybody else to be upset or afraid. Am I wrong? I mean, maybe I missed a part of the coverage of that.
So how do you guys feel about the response from Starbucks? They're going to close down on a day, I don't remember what day, but on a certain day.
May 29th. Yep. And I only remember because it's one of my baby's birthdays. I was like, thanks, Starbucks.
So on your baby's birthday, Starbucks is going to close down for a day.
My baby's birthday is more important, but yes, that's when Starbucks is going to close down.
That's why
and they're
going to
do like racial tolerance training. How do you guys feel about that?
I laughed. I was with a group of folks of color, and we laughed.
Agreed.
Hard.
after May 29th, I'm going to be very interested in following like what next stories there is going to be. I think when St. Paul Public Schools District, you know, initiated the Beyond Diversity, mm-hmm. right? Oh, man, it was like a some people like, oh, this is so exciting. It's great. We're finally talking about race in the classroom, outside the classroom. And some people were like, I don't need to talk about race. And there was a ton of staff that was like, this is a waste of my time. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go, but it's mandatory. So I'm going to go, but I'm really not going to learn anything from mm-hmm. it. Or I'm still going to be the same person mm-hmm. when I walk in, you know, kind of thing. So, I mean, great. Whatever. Kudos. Granola bars to Starbucks. But I mean, at the same time, too, they have no control, honestly, at the end of the day, how their staff is going to interpret
exactly.
or receive this information.
Why do the cops feel that they needed to show up?
Dispatchers should have, and I could be wrong, but from what I understand of how dispatchers are trained, they're trained to discern what is, and I mean, what they do a bit of triage themselves when they get calls, right? Mm-hmm. So they have to ask probing questions of the people calling. Because sometimes, and you've heard these blooper reels of 911 calls or somebody mm-hmm. calls, my ketchup isn't coming out of the bottle, you know, and right. they're like, okay, we're not going to send an officer because your ketchup is not coming out of your bottle properly. So was this a situation where a dispatcher could have asked a few more questions? Mm. Are they threatening you? Is anybody actually hurt or whatever? What are some signs? Why do you think that they need to be?
I don't know, but
I'm wondering if that discussion happened.
I mean, that's a thing. I know that people sometimes will call to report things to, and they make it sound worse than it is because they know they'll get quicker service. A few days ago, a friend of mine witnessed a black man get arrested at a Chipotle here locally, and she shot the thing on her phone, and she posted it on Facebook. And I think a lot of people are like, why didn't you say something? Why didn't you say something if you felt like he wasn't doing anything wrong? Mm-hmm. And this is something that I've seen a lot of people online saying, oh, man, if I was in that Starbucks, I would have been like, why are you guys arresting him? Blah, blah, blah. But she said, as a little Filipino girl, I didn't feel like I could approach these four cops and ask them, why are you arresting this black man?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'm going to go on record and say I don't know that I want anybody else to help when I'm in the middle of that situation. There's been too many times where a well-meaning person, I don't want to racialize the voice because I don't know that there's a racial pattern to this, but folks have stepped up. And all of a sudden, my skills that I've been taught by my family to de-escalate officers now goes out the window because somebody else is aggravating them.
Mm-hmm.
And the constant pattern is the brunt gets up on me.
Wait, Anthony. Go ahead. Step back. So, okay, just because someone steps up and asks a simple question, why is that aggravating the situation? And I'm pointing that out because it depends on who's asking that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if it's another person of color, then it's taken as antagonism.
Mm-hmm.
And which is what, you know, because if it's a white person, I don't think it's taken as antagonism.
I'm going to challenge that pattern because it hasn't mattered. So the one example is I was in San Antonio. We were at a summit and it was late night. It was Whataburger. It was the only thing that was open. I walk up to a bike officer. I figure I'm at a national conference with, you know, all this stuff. You know, I've got my I'm suited, but I'm at this moment, I'm not the black person that this officer is going to be and I'm having a mastery with. Right. And I walk up to him and go, you know, hey, is Whataburger still open? Right. Not knowing it's 24 hours. I'm so tourist at this point. And he's like, well, look like a tour. Like just his response to me was just downright negative.
Cop?
Yeah. Yeah. This is a bike officer. And so I'm like, well, okay, I leave that alone. I'm not even going to go there with you. I'm not home and I don't know this spot. So I'm just going to keep moving. I tell the group of white colleagues who are with me what just happened with the bike cop. One of them goes out of the store and starts to rail into this bike cop.
Yeah.
I'm like,
See, that's different.
So what I'm saying is
that's
is
white privilege.
Yeah, but that's
different though than what I was describing.
Well, it's not to me because both of these times, this time and many other times, there are other white folks have stepped into situations to call out this pattern, mm-hmm. and that's great. except for the fact that the ire doesn't seem to go to the person who's calling it out.
It's
the eyes stay on
us.
Me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now, you know, and at the end of that situation, you know, now my friend is out there in trying to help the situation, big air quotes.
Right.
And I, all of the guy hasn't once taken their eyes off of me. Mm. And so that's what I'm trying to call out. Like, no matter what the response tends to be, the visceral response, the visceral impact tends to stay
you
on the people
like
of
a
color.
Study. You need to do like a study on this, because I think so. I think it is a white privilege thing where they're going to walk up and say, well, I'm going to go up there and be, demand why you're being racist, you know, because I can. Right. But so
I highly do not recommend that.
So what are bystanders supposed to do?
I'd like the fact that May recorded it, like having somebody there to document and be able to speak to. Like, I like the fact that one of the situations I was in, the bystander who was there just watched. They were looking at me and they were assuring me. They weren't even addressing the officer who I wasn't having the issue with. They were like, look, when you're ready to go and make this complaint, I will be right there. Here's my name. Here's my number. I will be there and have a description with you. Like, that is something that is functional for me.
My son is 19 years old, and, you know, most parents are like, you know, hey, we need to have the talk. And, you know, sadly, the talk we had to have with our son is how he should react when he gets pulled over. He just got his license. Maybe he waited. He waited until he was 18. He wasn't like any other youth that was like, hey, when I'm 16, 15, I'm going to go get my license. He waited. Like, we've been so exposed, and he's seen his father get pulled over so many times. By cops for no reason at all, get pulled out of the cop car. I don't know if anybody knows, like the east side from like 3rd Street and Johnson Parkway mm-hmm, all mm-hmm. the way to Phelan Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Sergio was driving. My husband Sergio, who's Mexican, was pulled over 3 times.
On the same trip?
On the same trip. I was in the car with him.
Wow.
At Johnson Parkway. By the third time, and it's a different cop each time, the third time he was pulled over. And it's not even what? It's not even a mile, right? From 3rd Street to Johnson, on Johnson Parkway to the lake. And by the third cop, he almost lost it. And I was like, please. I was like, just keep it down. And it was, I think, like 10 o'clock at night. And that's the scary stuff. I get like choked up talking about it because I don't even want my son driving around late at night. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of the reality. And I know we went kind of in a tangent with the whole Starbucks thing, but it's really how folks are trained, how to de-escalate situations, how to do prompting questions. Like just, mm-hmm. But you can train someone as much as you can if their bias is ingrained in their historical, like, it's genetically just been passed down from generation to generation how much they don't like, you know, folks of color, native folks. I mean, it's in them. There's no training that's going to stop that.
Or take that out.
Yeah.
They've gathered data on the people who call 911 mm-hmm. and report black people for suspicious activity.
You mean walking down the street.
Exactly. Mm. So you may be surprised to learn that the majority of folks calling 911 in these situations tend to be white. So not a surprise. So officers are, so they're fed, they get that narrative from mm-hmm. a dispatcher who say, okay, there is a person who is, you know, fits this description, blah, blah, blah. You just drive by and, you know, ask mm-hmm. the homeowner what's going on. So they already have to take the mm-hmm. the perspective of that homeowner and not the person who's just like the brother who's walking down the street who maybe who is out flyering the neighborhood for his, you know, community center mm-hmm. and somebody, a person saw them, a white person sees this young man mm-hmm. walking down the street going up to doors and putting things on the doorsteps mm-hmm. and is wondering, that looks suspicious.
Yeah.
Calls the police. Mm-hmm. Dispatcher's like, okay, here's what we got. You know, and again, that's why dispatchers are – From what I understand, they've been being put on notice as like, look, you need to ask a few more questions before you decide to get an officer to respond to something like that, because it just seems like a
get a deeper sense of the story. You know, when you were asking, you know, where was the staff? The thing is, we only get like sound bites or clip bites of like when things are happening. There isn't like the before or the after, right? And so it's really hard to just. That's part of like this whole thing too. And when you were saying about the dispatchers, you know, they just released new videos on Stephen Clark's, right? Like of the muted cameras mm-hmm. and things like that. And it's like, what was happening prior to. And so there's so many pieces, but at the end of the day, and, you know, I wasn't trying to be like all pessimistic about law enforcement folks, because there I do know some really great officers on the east side that do really great work and put themselves on the line every day. But at the same time, too, I know there's resources available, and I almost feel like when I'm not trying to solve anything, and Starbucks isn't going to solve it in right. one day on no. May 29th.
No.
I mean, I gave birth on May 29th, but Starbucks is not going to be able to give birth to a new found
corporate culture.
Yes. So what I'm trying to say is, you know, with this whole process is that the work that we each do in our own communities is we need to create spaces and create connections and partnerships where we are breaking down those biases within our own communities and the communities that we work with. And really, I look to that as like how I can just be optimistic of how the future is going to look, because if we keep going back to like this thing of like, well, it's doomsday, it happened again. Well, the thing is, it happens every day. Mm-hmm. So what are we going to do to kind of change the narrative and change and shift?
Well, let me tell a closing story here. It's a good thing, I guess. My husband got pulled over for speeding, and he was going 5 over the whatever, and he was really mad that he had gotten pulled over. And then he and I were out to lunch one day, and I was driving, and I got pulled over for going 40 in a 30 zone. And he was just riled up, like Sergio was, you know, like, I cannot believe that these little things are getting us pulled over. And he was really mean to the cop. He was rude. And I was just like, you gotta shut up. Just, you know, I'm giving the cop my insurance, you know, all this stuff. And as we drove away, he was like, oh my God, if I was black, he would have shot me. Mm-hmm. You know, and he had that realization of like, he felt like he could sit here and be cruel and say all this stuff to the cop. And it occurred to him afterward, his privilege that he holds.
And Dave Chappelle had that sketch where he said, we're not gonna take it.
So this has been another episode of Counter Stories. I'm Lee Lee.
Anthony Galloway.
Brent Williams,
Don Eubanks,
Marianne Quiroz,
and we'll see you guys next time.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.